Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to Victorian geocacher Axe2 Youth Group. We find out a little bit about the history of Wagga geocaching with Rooster Man, and I give you my 5 tips of geocaching. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 17 of GeoTalk. Hopefully you're keeping up with your caching in the colder months of winter. A bit of snow has fallen throughout parts of southeast Australia, in particular the Ballarat region, where I know Emby does his caching, so I'm not too sure if he's been out enjoying the snow out with the caches. But also to the people up north who have been finding it's a little bit cold. And in fact, I was just chatting with Liz and Bruce, who have been travelling around the country, and they're up in the Atherton Tablelands, and they'll be featuring in the next episode of GeoTalk, and they say that it's even cold up in far north Queensland. So it looks like we can't escape the cold weather. Just a reminder that the last episode of Video GeoTalk went up on the web about a week or two ago. You can check that out from the feed on geotalkpodcast.com, or you can go to the YouTube version at youtube.com/geotalk. And thanks very much to Team WebGuy and the geocaches over in Adelaide who participated in that. There'll be another Adelaide version of GeoTalk video edition coming up in around about late August. Just before that one, we'll feature some video from an event, the Weapons of Mass Destruction, which was held down in Campbelltown. So a few video editions in the pipeline. Thank you to everyone who's taken part in an interview over the last couple of weeks. Please be patient. They'll be coming up over the next few months. So if you haven't heard your interview yet, it will be coming soon. The GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode: what is the oldest virgin in Australia? That is, which cache has been around the longest and still hasn't been found? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, on this episode of GeoTalk, we head down to the southern state of Victoria and we join Eric, who's part of Axe2 Youth Group, or Axe2YG. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Now, tell us, first of all, the usual question. How did you come up with your name, and when did you start geocaching?
I'm a youth pastor, and I'm involved with youth work. And our youth group's name is Axe2 Youth Group, and Acts is a book of the Bible, and chapter 2 was the chapter the youth group chose. So it's actually our youth group's name, and we started caching in 2004, around October.
So what was the reason behind geocaching?
Well, it's actually one of the parents of one of the guys that came to the youth group actually. He's into hang gliding, and he'd been doing some research on GPSs for his hang gliding, and he'd come across geocaching, and he said that this might be a good idea to take some of the young people out caching. So I looked it up and went out, and we did a few, and I've been rather addicted ever since.
What part of Melbourne are you based in, and which areas do you go geocaching most of the time?
Okay, I'm based in a country town called Warburton, which is south-east of Melbourne, or more east of Melbourne. We're up in the mountains, Mount Donabewang. We get snow up on the hills here in the wintertime, so you might say I'm kind of out in the bush. And areas that I go caching in, well, I'd have to say all over. There's no areas that I haven't cached. Mainly done Bendigo a lot, been to Geelong just recently. Yeah, quite all over the place. I haven't been up the northeast a lot, but I've been quite a bit around the state and interstate since I've been caching.
So how many finds are you up to?
Okay, I'm up to 2,133.
And that's just in 3 years?
That's in, 3 years.
Would you say that you're therefore addicted to geocaching?
Oh, seriously.
So I should ask, do you have any other hobbies?
At the moment, no. Geocaching's my main hobby. I don't know if you know, but I get out with Daxemi quite a bit. So we go caching when he's in Victoria. We get out together. And you might have seen the username the Rebel Alliance about. Well, that's me and Daxemu. So yeah, I've got a few finds.
What's your favourite sort of cache? What do you like going out looking for?
I like a good challenging micro, actually. I like a good camo cache. I don't know if you've been to Bendigo or not, but there's a cacher up there called Romax, and he's pretty legendary for his well-camouflaged hides or his sneaky hides, and they're my sort of favourite hides. I like a really good challenge.
Take us through some of the more memorable caches that you've found over the past 3 years.
One by a guy called Nutcache, called Lord of the Rings 20. I can't actually tell you why, but you'd have to go and do it. But the actual cache container is just a masterpiece in itself. He has a whole series based on the Lord of the Rings, which is actually in my local area in the Yarra Ranges. And this one takes you, it's called There and Back, so it actually takes you up a track and back down a track. And if you've seen the Lord of the Rings movie, it's very similar to a Hobbit's house.
Okay.
And some of my more memorable caches, I did one the other day, actually, I'm still thinking about it, and it was called Asian Works in Progress. And I call the western suburbs of Melbourne, it's a bit barren out that way, it's all flat and grasslands, not much out there. And you just drive to this cache, and you're just driving along in the middle of nowhere, just paddocks, and you head down this road, and it was just an incredible sight. It was like some sort of a Japanese Hindu temple, but it would have had like 100 statues lining the roadway down into it, and big waterfall, and like Japanese-style buildings. And it's just out in the middle of nowhere. It was just incredible that it was actually there. It was kind of still being built. So just to see it was just amazing.
Now, in the 2,000-odd caches that you found around different parts of the country, would you say that there are certain areas that have a distinctive feel or something different about them?
Well, in Victoria, you've got Bendigo, and they are probably some of the toughest hides that I've come across in Bendigo. They all try to outdo each other in Bendigo, so they're all kind of really hard, well hidden. I think my favourite place that I've cased in would have to be Brisbane. They love their Eclipse Mints. Not that I'm a big fan of them, but they love them up there. And a few of Wingap's got some fake rocks, some of the best fake rocks I've seen. The whole just caching Brisbane suburbs has got a whole new feel about it. Everywhere you go, there's those bush turkeys, and the flora and fauna is quite different from what I experience here. Of course, you know, ACT is full of hills, and I've cased Adelaide suburbs, but that was rather rushed to really take in. There's quite a lot of different diverse areas in Adelaide, but I think Brisbane's probably one of my most favourite places to cache with the feel of it.
So when you go out caching, do you have a few items that you always take with you, such as a carry bag? And what would you include in them?
Yeah, okay. I've actually got it's like going camping when we go caching. I've actually got a bag specifically set aside for caching. Contains my headlamp. It's actually a compartment bag, and I have 2 litre Sistema containers in it. I have a headlamp in it. I have a container with the travel bags and coins in it. I have a box in it with first aid gear. Then I have another box with all the different assorted plugs and stuff you need for your GPS or your charge your torches up. I have spare globes, spare batteries. Then I have a cache maintenance box. Contains spare notebooks, pens, film canisters, stash notes, plastic bags, silica gels. That's for doing any maintenance on any cases that might require it. And then, of course, I have my TomTom Navigator in it as well as the GPSs. I usually carry 2 GPSs, my Magellan and a Garmin as a backup.
Which one do you prefer, just to stir the war?
Magellan.
Well, there you go. We're going to get Garmin people now emailing us about that. What do you find is a common mistake that people make when they're putting caches out?
Container. Choice of container. I made this mistake myself when I first started, and I'm slowly changing over. But just cheap containers, I think. I've tried to use the steamers now. I just find they're the best container. I've seen just they don't. A lot of the containers they use, they don't seal, or they're cheap and nasty. They just don't last. So I think the main mistake is choice of container, really.
What advice would you give to someone who's just started into geocaching, has been doing it for, say, a few weeks or a few months?
Try and hook up with someone in your local area who can point you in the right direction. Or do a few caches first before you hide one. I'd say read up a lot too, like taking coordinates. I think that's probably one of the big mistakes. People just walk up, they hit go to, or hit mark, and they walk away, just haven't let the GPS settle or got a good signal. So I think the main thing is find someone who can help you out or get a bit of advice before you get out there.
Have you got any milestones that you've set for the next few months or years that you'll be geocaching, and do you think the addiction will wear off in the future?
I actually want to hit 1,000. I want to get 1,000 caches for this year. I've never got 1,000 in a year yet, so I'd like to try and get 1,000 for this year. At this stage, I haven't got any goals set. I'm still kind of recovering from our little Adelaide jaunt, which was 128, was it, or 124? Anyway, it was a lot of caches in 24 hours period. That was with Dak and Hall Morfords from up in Brisbane. So that was early in the year. So I'm still recovering for that, so I haven't set any big targets like that, but I'm still aiming for 1,000 this year.
Well, for someone who hasn't even hit 1,000 in 4 years, that sounds like an impressive effort. And look, I wish you all the best in your future geocaching travels.
Thank you very much.
G'day there, this is Rogainer. I'm up on top of Flinders Peak with Ruffles. It's Saturday the 21st of July. We've just climbed 550 vertical metres in about an hour and a half. Fabulous winter's day here in southeast Queensland. I've just come up here because there's been a couple of no finds on my cache, but it's still safe and sound, so Rubble's just gone off to have a look for it. Talk to you later.
Well, here we are at the Parkley Markets in the northern western suburbs of Sydney, and I'm catching up with one of Wagga's most prolific geocaches, Greg, also known as Rooster Man.
Yeah, g'day Darren, and go the mighty Roosters.
Tell me first of all how you got into geocaching down in Wagga.
Well, in fact, I was doing the Google search, as most do. I'd seen a fellow carrying a handheld GPS on a cruise ship we'd been on a couple of years before. We were about to go on another cruise ship, and I thought, well, I might see if I can have a look at one of those GPSs and just track the speed of the ship and mark the points and all that sort of stuff. And just put in a Google, I put in portable GPS, and up come geocaching. So before I'd even bought the GPS, I'd seen that there was about probably one or two cases around Wagga, and quite a few, so it was early 2005. There wasn't much around at all, but I thought if I get this GPS, I can still get it to do the cruise ship tracking and check out these other little adventures that were going on. So I'd actually logged on to geocaching.com, joined up before I'd even ordered the GPS, so I couldn't even go out looking. I knew where a couple were, and I had to wait a couple of weeks for the GPS to arrive before I could even go out. So the bug was there before I even got it.
And how many caches were there in the Wagga region when you started in 2005?
Yeah, probably about two or three. Not many at all.
And were they from people who were in Wagga, or from people who had travelled through?
No, there was only the one original one in Wagga, and there's one called Kengal, about 20 or 30 k's out of Wagga, which is like on a fairly high hill, and it was probably a Terrain 4 or something, and it was one of the only real ones, but it had been there for a long time by some other traveller, but there was not many around at all, no.
All right, so you had to travel out of Wagga to find caches. Where were you heading initially?
Yeah, the first one was family down in Melbourne, and I've also got family here in Sydney, so it was a couple in Sydney and a couple in Melbourne, and of course we had to venture to Canberra, and we saw some of those, and That was about it. There wasn't even many in Albury, which is an hour and a half away.
So then obviously you started placing some of your own. How long did it take for the number of geocaching participants in Wagga to grow?
Probably the end of 2005, so within 6 to 9 months, I suppose. There was about probably 3 more active ones by then. So that's when it really did start taking off, yeah.
Just to give listeners a bit of an idea of Wagga, how large is the town? And give us a little bit of a brief description of, well, it's not really a town, a city, the city of Wagga Wagga.
Yeah, the population's around 60,000 now, so they have called it the largest inland city for a long time. So that's, other than Newcastle Wollongong, it's the biggest city in New South Wales. So, yeah, there's the river goes through it, there's the university, there's RAF Army and Navy are even there.
So does that reflect in the type of participants that you have there? Do you have any sort of military types or university types involved?
No, actually. No, surprising. It's still the secret business sort of stuff around town. We haven't done any of the media. We thought, a couple of the earlier teams, we thought we might have tried some of the publicity that you see happens everywhere and just see whether it was. But it was taken off so well, and people are travelling from Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra and all that coming through, and of course Adelaide, all those travellers. So, yeah, we didn't really need to pick it up too much. It was actually starting to saturate a little bit, so we had to ease it off a little, I think.
So what's a typical Wagga-type cache? Are they mainly traditionals or multis or puzzles? I mean, is there a common theme there in the city?
Yeah, no, there's a mainly traditional. We started to put in a few multis, of course, to show people around town. There is only a couple of puzzles, and everyone's got big ideas about how to make one, you know, a little bit harder. So there's a couple a little bit harder. There's the usual tanks and cannons and that sort of stuff that makes people stop and have a real good look. But generally pretty straightforward, yeah.
You mentioned that the number of caches have slowed down a bit. Does that mean the actual activity is slowing down as well, or is there still this sort of same rate in growth of participants?
No, the participants have dropped off a little, and with not many new ones, you know, even those of us that have found all the ways around town aren't able to find any. We've actually got to travel like here to Sydney or Melbourne to go finding a few more.
It seems to be a common, I suppose, problem, for lack of a better word, for some of the regional centres in Australia, Dubbo being another one, where you do sort of, you reach a number of caches and caching participants, and then it sort of, it wanes, and everyone sort of stands back and waits for someone to put one out and so forth. Do you think there's a way in which geocaching can sort of get around that? Should it allow people who are travelling through to place caches?
I think we tried to, we obviously eased off a little because we didn't want to saturate it. We've heard of the saturation in the US, of course, and there's, you know, one every 200 metres and all that sort of stuff. So we decided we'd probably, you know, just put more out of town and start to find some of those way off interesting places to take people to. So, in fact, I also work about an hour and a quarter away over at Leeton. And I've placed some over around the Leeton area and along the road to Leeton and around a couple of other places like that, so that people do the country run. But we probably didn't think we'd oversaturate it. So as new cases come through, there's got to be places for them to find. So we'll leave that for them.
Okay, so if someone is travelling through the Wagga region, what are some of the, I suppose, choice caches that you would recommend to someone coming through the city for the first time?
Oh, look, there's all different types for different likes. Like, I know when I'm travelling away, I pick what I sort of like. So if you're looking for a search, there is a couple of puzzles if you like those. There's a couple up along a couple of the hills, so there's a bit of a walk. Mainly they're all on the flats because there's only a couple of hills. There's a couple out on the Pomigalana Reserve, which is good for a bit of four-wheel driving if you're into that. Different types for different people. There's not a lot of real super difficult, so we've never really set them up for big challenges. If you are going there and you've got to do a real hard one and it takes half a day, well, that takes away from finding a few others.
Being on a popular tourist route between Melbourne, Sydney and sort of Adelaide being at the apex of those three cities, obviously you get a lot of travel bugs and a lot of geocoins coming through. Tell us a bit about some of the more unusual ones you've found and also some of the spots that people might be able to use in the Wagga region to drop them off.
There is a couple of intersections of the highways. There's the Sturt Hume, there's the Sturt Newell, and there's also the Sturt Olympic. I've got one on the Sturt Olympic, so the Sturt runs pretty much east-west right through Wagga, and the Olympic runs north-south, so I've got a travel bug drop-off spot right in the middle, and there's one about 50 or 80 k's east and another drop-off spot about 100 k's west of Narandra, so good run for TBs and coins to drop off. If anyone dropped one off, I'm bound to go and discover if it looks pretty interesting anyway.
Any unusual ones that you've seen?
I like some of the international coins. Just a little bit different than some of the travel bugs, but yeah, I like some of the coins, and I've actually got a couple on my own, but I fear that they will end up in someone's collections, and that's what everyone does, but yeah, I'll discover coins and pass them on. Just a lot of the different patterns and styles of coins, pretty fun, the micro coins and all that, just for something different.
Just on that topic of losing geocoins, I mean, when you send one out, I mean, what's your expectation as to how long it will last, or what are the chances of losing it?
Yeah, I've only set a couple out, and I put on them that I'd like them just to be handed from person to person, or only placed in a case if someone else is going to pass one on. But yeah, one lasted about 3 months, and he's ended up in a collection somewhere, exactly the opposite to what his mission was. So it's probably a little disheartening when that happens, but it's bound to happen, that's for sure.
Well, on behalf of everyone listening to Geo Talk, Greg Roosterman, thank you very much for joining us.
No worries, thank you. Go the Roosters!
Hi, this is Neil from Team Web Guy. We've got an event coming up out on the Lithgow Plateau next month on the 11th and 12th of August called the Freeze Your Off at Lithgow event. Temperatures are already plummeting with lows of -6.9 last week at Lithgow, so it could be cold. But we'd love you to come along and freeze your ass off with the rest of us out there on the Lithgow Plateau, do some amazing caches, look at some amazing scenery, share some good times around the fire on a Saturday night with some of your fellow caches. So look up the event, geocaching.com. Code is GC14717. Love to see you there.
Over the last couple of episodes, you've probably noticed that the last question I've asked most geocachers during a profile is, what advice would you give to a new geocacher? Now, I got to thinking, what advice would I give to a new geocacher? And so I've come up with my 5 tips of geocaching. Okay, tip number 1, don't follow the arrow, follow the trail. Now, your GPS receiver will always show you where the geocache is hidden in a straight line. Now, that's great if you're a bird or a small marsupial bouncing through the bush. But you're probably more likely to be a 60, 70 or even a 100 kilogram geocacher, and trampling through the bush isn't really a great idea. There's also a chance that if you start going bush bashing, you're going to come across the track again later on. So the best thing is stick to the track. Not only could it save you time, but it will save the environment. And you'll probably find that the geocache isn't far off a track anyway. This leads me to tip number 2. So tip number 2 is plan your cache hunt. Now, some caches are fairly straightforward. Urban caches, for example, aren't usually hard to find, and they rely more on a cunning placement, so you're not going to have to look very far to find them, and it's fairly easy to find a park nearby. But if you're looking for a cache in the bush or in a remote location, then you need to do a little bit of study beforehand. One of the best tools at your disposal is Google Earth or Google Maps. you can use the maps and satellite imagery to give you an idea of the lay of the land, identifying things such as roads, parkland and bush, and even the nearest car park. Topographic maps and street directories are also very useful, as are the case descriptions. So do a bit of planning and it will save you a heck of a lot of time when you go out hunting. Tip number 3, take a backpack. No matter where you're going, a backpack is handy for geocaching. In the summertime, you can carry sunscreen, insect repellent, a hat, and of course, plenty of water. In the wintertime, it's useful to throw in a rain jacket, maybe even a beanie or an umbrella. I always pack a first aid kit, some spare pens and logbooks, a bit of food to nibble along the way, and of course, a pair of gloves. Gloves are handy not only for when you're out in the bush where you might be trying to avoid snakes, ticks, spiders and prickly bushes, but they're also useful for when you go urban geocaching where, once again, you're looking out for spiders but you're also trying to avoid rubbish, dirt and occasionally syringes. So always keep a pair of gloves handy in your geocaching backpack. Tip number 4, respect the environment. Most of the time, you know where to find a geocache or where it should be. However, if you need to conduct a more detailed search of the area, make sure that you replace any rocks, logs, branches, and even leaf litter that you disturb. Remember, you could be messing up someone's home. Sometimes the geocache is close to the corner of a garden bed or on the outer edge of a clump of shrubs, and that makes things fairly easy. But occasionally the geocache hider would like to make it a little more difficult to find. But this doesn't give you the excuse to literally tear the place apart. If you can't find it, then just walk away and have a go another time. Hiders of geocaches should also be aware that by placing a cache in a particular spot will encourage a greater number of people to explore that area, typically in a 20 meter radius. So consider what impact your cache will have on the surrounding environment. Also remember tip 1 about sticking to paths and tracks. Park rangers frown upon the creation of new paths, particularly those through sensitive areas. Ensure that your cache is far away from a muggle zone, but doesn't encourage geocaches to venture too far into unmarked areas. And finally, tip number 5, respect the feelings of fellow geocaches. The internet is a very impersonal medium. Sarcasm loses its humorous nature, and on the net it's very easy to offend someone when you thought you were being funny. Remember that your logs will also appear in a public domain. So if you're unhappy with your experience at a particular geocache, be diplomatic and fair in your posting or contact the owner privately. If you find that a particular geocacher's style of geocaches and their hides aren't to your liking, then why not consider adding them to your ignore list and avoid confrontation? Remember, there are many types of geocaches out there, each with their own likes and dislikes. What you consider to be geo-trash may be another person's geo-treasure. So there's my 5 tips for geocaching. Now, that's not all of them, and you may not agree with all of them or have your own. So I'm opening it up to you. If you've got your own list of geocaching tips, then why don't you email or record them and send them in to GeoTalk? Remember, you can call the GeoTalk line on 02-800-50-436, or that 02-850-GEO, and you can record straight onto the GeoTalk line, or save it as a file on your computer and email it to geotalk@mac.com. The best audio tips that I'll play on a future show will receive a prize.
This is Paul Kanopaki, a member of SLAGA, the St. Louis Area Geocachers Association. I produce the SLAGA Geocaching Podcast, which consists of conversations I have with geocachers and land managers, and audio captured at events of interest to geocachers. You will hear new and familiar caching stories from people of all walks of life who share the same hobby. You'll get to know the cachers themselves, what they believe and what they do with their lives when they aren't geocaching. You will hear our experiences working with city, county, state parks, and conservation areas. I record audio at geocaching events such as picnics, group hunts, and training sessions. To listen to episodes of the SLAGA Geocaching Podcast, go to podcast.geostl.com. And if you happen to be coming to the St. Louis, Missouri area, check out the SLAGA website at www.geostl.com. Here's hoping your signal is strong and your bearing is true.
Well, that just about brings us to the end of this podcast for episode number 17. Thanks very much for joining us. First of all, the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question, which geocache is the oldest in Australia? The answer to that one is Nichols Knob by Equinox. It's GCG3HJ. It was planted on the 20th of April 2003, and I'm not really surprised that it hasn't been found yet, because if you read the cache description, it says Nichols Knob is in the middle of nowhere. It was named after Frank Hann in 1908 as after one of his camels died there. And I think you'd probably would too if you didn't take any water with you. The nearest track or road, according to the cache description, is 15 kilometres away. And to give you a rough idea of where it is, it's almost smack in the middle of Western Australia, a couple of hundred kilometres east of Meekatharra, and probably a few more northeast of Kalgoorlie. So good luck to anyone who's going to give that a go. Well, in the next episode, episode 18 of GeoTalk, as I mentioned, we'll be chatting with Liz and Bruce and finding about their geocaching odyssey around Australia. And we'll also be speaking to Postie Girl from South Australia. It's a great interview, that one. So until next time, safe geocaching.